you, Rabbi Blazer. It's a great covet for me to be here. Just to establish my Miami credentials, I am a Talmud of Rav Zweig Shlita in Miami Beach. And I remember that in the days that I learned in Miami Beach, they used to tell us that there was another community in a far-off country known as North Miami Beach. And I've discovered that you don't need a visa to get here, but actually, I feel very much at home, both in Miami Beach and in North Miami Beach, especially that Yerush Koyl is here now because he and I grew up in the same neighborhood in Silver Spring. He's a dear friend for many years, and it's truly a covet for me to be able to speak in his presence. I also want to give my personal thanks and acknowledgement to Mr. Moshe Noble. We are former roommates, not just old friends, and I thank you for sponsoring tonight's event. All of you have read about Bitachon, have heard about Bitachon, you've probably read the many Sforim that are written on the topic, and I'm sure you will agree with me that there is one thing that characterizes just about everything you read on the subject, and that is, it is full of praise and description as to how incredibly wonderful it is to live on Bitachon, to be able to trust Hashem, that Hashem will take care of all of our needs. It's an incredible madrega to reach, and to live that way makes life a joy, makes life a pleasure, stress-free, because Hashem is providing everything. And that halavai, we should be on such a level, and you'll read all of the praises and descriptions of what a wonderful thing it is to be on that level. Perhaps you'll also agree with me to note that there is something gravely missing in the literature on the subject of Bitachon, which is, it's all wonderful if you're on that madrega, but how do you get there? How do you become a person who is capable of living purely on Bitachon? How does it work? What are the steps? Now, some people come by Bitachon naturally. In my case, I have a mother who's a worrier and a father who's very relaxed, and I take after my father. So there's a certain natural sense. My mother would say, well, we have to worry about this, and how's this going to happen? And she'd take a million notes to make sure she didn't forget anything. And my father would say, it'll all work out. So I think I picked up a little bit of natural bitachon from that. So if you have natural bitachon, that's great. Maybe you'll be able to grow into making it into the kind of bitachon you read about in this farm. But what happens if, like some of my siblings, you take after my mother? What happens if you're not naturally a baal bitachon? How do you acquire it? And I have to tell you, with all the reading that I've done, I have not been able to find something that addresses this particular question. So, if you have an entrepreneurial spirit, you know that when there is a need out there and it's not being taken care of, so you have to invent it yourself. So I decided I would research the question and try to find what the answer is. How do you develop bitachon? So when I was in Eretz Yisrael years ago, I remember where many people live on bitachon, I would ask people, how do you do it? And I would get the same answer. Hashem provides. And it's a great answer, and it's true, and it's beautiful. But I would ask them, but come on, how do you do it? Like, you have an obligation coming up at the end of the week. What do you do? How do you know that you're going to get it? And how do you know? I mean, you just know, obviously. But, you know, what if you don't have that knowledge? What would you do to get it? How does it work? And nobody would answer me. Nobody would give me in detail what it is that you have to do. I kept pursuing it. Finally, I got an answer from one Zaken in Yerushalayim who told me the following. He said, I will give you some Rashi Prakim. I'll give you a little bit of information about it. And after that, you're on your own. If you can figure it out, then it's yours. I took him up on it because it was the only thing, the only offer I had been given. He showed me a Beis Halevi, which you're welcome to look at on your own. It's the Beis Halevi in Parshas Miketz. It's about Yosef and the incident with the Sar HaMashkim, with his mentioning to the Saramashkim, please remember me to Paro, and he's punished for it, and there's a Beis Halevi on that subject. That was what he showed me, and he says, now you're on your own. If you can figure out how it works, then you'll know how it works. I went back to the States. I actually ran a small business for a while, and I had some theories as to how it worked. So I used to test my theories in running my business. It took me about 8 years, and by the end of the 8 years, I began to see the pattern, and I began to understand and put together what I now call the six steps of Bitachon, and I've been teaching it now for 30 years. So in those 30 years, it has never once failed to work. So this is an incredible system, and I'm going to share it with you, Bez Hashem, tonight. I want to give you a little bit of background, but hopefully tonight I'll just be a beginning, and you'll join the many people who I've been able to help to actually make this a reality in your life. The first thing that I think is crucial to recognize about bitachon is that bitachon is not merely a madrega. It's not merely something that we can strive to get to a level where someday we can keep it. Bitachon is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa, which means that each and every one of us is required to live with bitachon all the time. It's no different than the laws of kashrus. You don't have an option to wait till you reach a madrega to keep kosher. You have to keep kosher at whatever level you're at. And you have to be mekayim, the mitzvah of bitachon, at whatever level you're at. Now, one of the first things that I like to ask audiences I speak to is, how many of you believe that you know where in the Torah we are obligated, where does the Torah require us to live on bitachon? What is the source of the mitzvah of bitachon? Does anyone want to give a stab at it?
It has to be not on the Torah, not on the Torah.
Presumably, a mitzvah d'oraisa would be in the Torah.
When Yonah says in Shar Gimel that when the Torah says not to be afraid of Sira, what Sira may have with the cause will come back to Sirah, that's the makar from the Torah.
It's true. That's actually the makar for not fearing in war. And it's based on the mitzvah of bitachon, but it is not the actual makor of bitachon. I'm sorry? Tam tihia is related to bitachon, but it's not specifically the mitzvah of bitachon. Tamim tihia means you have to be honest and open and pure in your dealings with Hashem, but there's an actual mitzvah. I'm sorry?
Parshas Lech Lecha.
We're in Parshas Lech Lecha.
Avram is told to leave. He doesn't ask why.
Okay, so he obviously had bitachon, but the only mitzvah that I'm aware of in Parshas Lech Lecha is the mitzvah of Bris Milah. Where is there an actual chiyuv in the Torah? Now, let me give you a hint. I'm sorry?
Has anyone ever got it?
When I give the hint, some people get it. Let me give you a hint. It's in the Aseres HaDibros. Okay, now you're on. It's in the Aseres HaDibros. Which one is it? I'm sorry? Anoicha Shemalkecha is the mitzvah of emuna. It is not the mitzvah of bitachon. Now, emuna is a prerequisite for bitachon.
Let's go through all of them.
You're going to have to defend your answer, though. You cannot have bitachon without having emuna. This forum actually tell you you can have emuna and still not have bitachon, but you can't have bitachon without emuna. Why?
The Chayodam or others say that is clear that whatever happens to you and whoever does anything to you is the direct messenger of Hashem, and only he's pushing the buttons.
Okay, so you're right, but I would like to explain it with a different reason, and I think you'll agree with me. It is lo yelacha, but why? The mitzvah of lo yelacha is the prohibition against avodah zarah. Why would a person want to have another god? I mean, if you want to be an atheist, be an atheist. What do you need to have another god replacing HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What is the drive to do that? So I think you'll see that the reason why a person has a drive to have some kind of a god is because we have needs all the time that we know that we do not have the power innately to fulfill. So for example, you're a farmer You need to have the rain on your crops in order for the crops to grow, to make a living. You can't control if it's going to rain. And so if you have this sense of fear or this sense of uncertainty, you need something to believe in, or else you're not going to be able to get yourself to plow your field. You need to believe that something out there is going to be able to provide for me. So if you don't believe that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you desperately need something to believe in. So the Pasuk tells us, Lo yeh lecha Elohim acharim al panai, that whenever you have a need, you are not to rely on something else. Ella, rather, you are to rely on me. That is the mitzvah of bitachon. It's the second dibra. It's not untrue.
He's bringing those top 10 mitzvahs. And he's bringing these sources. That's the source of the Torah.
There's no question that if you are not Tamim Hashem Elokecha, you're not going to be able to be Mekayim Bitachon. In that sense, I agree with you. But I don't think you can deny that the actual nature of Lo Yelecha is to have Bitachon in Hashem, not in some other God, which is the only reason why you would want to have another God. That really is the mitzvah. And to show you why it has to be there, it's because anybody will tell you that number one and number two, the top two pillars of Yahadus, are Emunah and Bitachon. Emunah, we know, is the first Dibra. Doesn't it make sense that Bitachon would be the second? Clearly, that is the Makor. Even if we are to disagree about the Makor, but certainly we have an obligation to live on Bitachon. Now, that creates two concerns. Number one, if we have a mitzvah to do something, there has to be halachos. There have to be details. Hashem can't tell us that we're obligated to do something and then not tell us how to do it. So there has to be a set of halachos, hilchos bitachon, that tells us exactly how we're supposed to follow it in order to be mekayim this mitzvah. Number two, there's an enormous problem that I think is the reason why most of us just feel that, yeah, I have bitachon, but I work. I go to work. Because really, if bitachon is the reality that it should be, why do any of us go to work? Why don't we just sit at home and come to learn and daven, and then let Hashem provide us what He says He's going to provide us? I'll tell you what I think is holding us back. I think every one of us realizes that with bitachon, there is a catch-22. What's the catch-22? So I think I need something. So I'm not going to do any work for it. I'm going to sit at home. I'm going to let Hashem provide it. Now, if it comes, that's great. Might not come. And how would I explain it not coming? Very simple. I'll say Hashem didn't agree with me that I needed it. He said, no, you don't need it. So he has a loophole that I can't close. Because anything that I'm going to sit and say I need, so Hashem has to provide it, I can conclude, I guess I didn't need it. So how can I ever really let go of my work and let Hashem provide when He has the option at every time to say He didn't agree that I needed it and that's why I didn't get it. So I can't really do it. Now the truth is it's convoluted logic because if I really don't need it, so then I still should be able to sit at home. Hashem will provide my actual needs, and whatever He doesn't give me, I may have thought I needed it, but I guess I learned that I don't, so still. But it's very difficult because we're used to conducting our lives the way we understand our lives to be, and we realize that if we're going to live on the level of bitachon, so then maybe we have to completely neutralize our way of thinking in favor of Hashem, and that's a very, very difficult thing to do. But if I'm mechuyev to do it, I have to do it. So how do I deal with this catch-22? How do I deal with this loophole? So that is most of what the six steps of Bitachon are about. It is what I believe is the only way to resolve this conundrum, and that's what I want to share with you tonight. First of all, how do we know that Hashem has accepted upon Himself to provide us all of our needs? That you'll find in many of the Sforim of Bitachon. The source that I like in particular is one that many of us overlook. It's in the davening. It's actually in the davening three times a day. But very few of us, I believe, actually say it. It's at the end of Olenu, there's a little paragraph that begins Al Tira Mipachad Pisom, and in it there is a pasuk that's quoted from, say, for Yeshaya, and the pasuk reads V'ad Zikno Anihu V'ad Sevo Ani Esbol Ani Asisi V'Ani Esa V'Ani Esbol V'Amalet. What does those words mean? Ani Asisi V'Ani Esa. What they mean is that Hashem says, I made and I will sustain. And in that pasuk, I understand that Hashem has told us that He is committed to giving sustenance to that which He created. Now, that's sustenance. Sustenance is what we need. Has Hashem promised to give us everything that we want? No, He never promised that. We can certainly daven for anything that we want. He may give it to us, He may not. But if it's a need, Hashem has committed Himself to giving it to us. So you have to understand that Hashem hasn't committed to not allow us to die. Everyone's going to die. So what the commitment is that kol zman that we're alive, Hashem is committed to take care of us. When a person's time goes,
there's no point in worrying.
The point is that people have needs during their lifetimes, and we're now learning that we have a chiyuv to rely on Hashem for those needs. How do we actually do
that? People that are left over, the ones that are messed over. Dead.
Correct. And then all your needs are, you know. So, the truth is, yes?
Isn't that a catch 22 also?
I'm sorry?
Isn't that a catch 22 also? All your needs are not provided.
Right.
And you die.
Correct.
Oh, that was what Hashem wanted, so that, so be it, but there are people need to eat, they need to drink, they need shelter, and if doesn't provide that to somebody, and they don't.
People need to die also.
Correct. If our needs don't get met to the point that we die, you're correct. But I think you'll understand that there are many needs. A person needs to not be hungry. So even short of dying as a result of not getting our needs met, there are many needs that we have to get fulfilled, which is why we do go to work. We do have needs that we require for our lives to have basic quality. And if Hashem says, I'm going to sustain you, we assume that Hashem is going to sustain us at a reasonable level. And so there itself, we have the question. What to do about the fact that, yes, sometimes people die is a legitimate question, but I think that we can understand doesn't necessarily have to be included in how Bitachon works. Let's understand it in terms of the needs we have while we're alive. If you still have the question, ask me then. There was a time in history, actually I should say there were two times in history, when we actually experienced living on nothing but Bitachon. The most famous being the Dor HaMidbar. During the 40 years of wandering, all of our needs were provided. Ad kidei kach that Chazal say that we had clothing that grew with us, man was provided, water was provided, everything, all our needs were taken care of. In fact, one of the reasons that the Ramban cites as why it was that at the time of the Meraglim, the people were so willing to accept the possibility that Eretz Yisrael was not a place to go to, was the fear that all of this provision, all being provided for, was going to vanish when we went into Eretz Yisrael. And there was some truth to that. What was going to happen was the system was going to change. It wouldn't be just based on handouts. We would be working the land. We'd be doing a lot of activities on our own. It would become a partnership. But Hashem would still be providing. And what I want to share with you tonight is what I believe is the system that was intended for use in a place like Eretz Yisrael, where we are going to live normal lives, where we are going to live lives of working the land and working for a living, where at the same time we recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is providing for us. How do we cross that gap between just understanding in theory that Hashem is providing for us and actually knowing it in our gut?
Were they holding in the dark and draw on the level that they understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving them all their needs?
I don't think you could have missed it. Everything was there. The money.
But if they're actually strong, why would they go to work? I wouldn't have gone to work. I would say, I'm going to just keep doing this the way we did it for 40 years. System worked 40 years of everything happening, so let's just do it that way.
It makes perfect sense in theory. But they understood that Eretz Yisrael was not going to be the same thing. The month stopped. They knew they were going to have to do something on their own in order to get it. And you're right, they were supposed to continue to understand that Hashem is providing it. But there's a partnership. There's a partnership that's going to start between us and Hashem. And once that partnership starts, once I have to be doing some work, well, how do I really understand that I'm working, but Hashem is providing? How do we negotiate? How do we navigate that difference? Because if we can figure out how we navigate that difference, we can do it today, right? In yeshiva, all our needs are taken care of. And then someday we're going to leave yeshiva and we're going to go out into the working world. And, you know, at some point the checks may stop coming. So if we have bitachon, so what's the difference? In my sefer, I tell the story of Reb Zusha. Reb Zusha would come home every day. And he would sit down after davening. He'd come home and it was time for breakfast. And he would sit down at his table and he would throw his hands up to Shemaim and he would say, Tate Zusha is hungry. And he had a cook who would cook his breakfast in the next room. And when Zusha would say, Tata Zusha is hungry, so the cook knew that was the cue and she would bring his breakfast out. So this happened every day. And one time, the cook got a little miffed. And she says, who does this guy think he is? He's calling out to Hashem, and I'm the one who's providing him his breakfast. Well, tomorrow, I'll teach him a lesson. And when he calls up to Shemaim, I'm not going to bring his breakfast. So the next morning, Reb Zusha comes home. He sits down. He says, Tata Zusha is hungry. And she doesn't move. There's a knock at the door. He answers the door. It's the next door neighbor. She says, Zusha, I saw how you woke up early this morning and shoveled the walk so my old father could get to Minyan. And I'm so grateful to you. I made you breakfast. So somewhere, if we can figure out how that actually works, we can apply it to our lives. And that's the purpose of the six steps of Bitachon. Let me begin with step one, although I do want to tell you that, we'll see when we get up to it. Step one really is a preliminary step, because Hashem says he's going to provide for all of our needs, but of course he never committed to provide them before we actually need it. I understand bitachon to apply on a need-by-need basis. And so when someone approaches me and they say, I have a need, I'd like to apply bitachon to it, the first question I ask them is, and this is step one, ask yourself the question, is this your next most immediate upcoming need? Because if it is, you need it now, and of course Hashem is committed to provide it, we can discuss it. If it's not something you need right now, so then why are you looking at it? Maybe it's coming to you at the right time. So the first question, the first step is this my next most immediate upcoming need? Now, of course, if you're a nervous kind of person, it might not mean that it's tomorrow's need. I could be worried about my rent that's due at the end of the month, but I'm worried about it now, so it's an immediate need. So that depends person by person. Step one is it my next most immediate upcoming need? If the answer is yes, then you can go to step two. Here, we run into the other difficulty I mentioned earlier. We are very happy to tell Hashem what our needs are, but we recognize that Hashem can answer, I don't agree. Now, how do we get out of that problem? Because as long as there's a loophole like that, I can't really comfortably rely that I'm going to get the thing that I say I need. I think the answer to that lies in the pasuk. The pasuk tells us, Torah lo b'shamayim hi. The authority of Torah, of Psak Halacha, rests with us. Let me ask you the following question. Let's say you have a chicken with a shayla. So you go to the Rav, and the Rav paskins the chicken is kosher. Are you going to eat it? You went to your Rav. The Rav paskins kosher. You'll eat it. Why? Maybe Hashem doesn't agree. This is your Olam Haba at stake. Okay, so the Rav says it's kosher. How does that mean that in Shamayim they agree that it's kosher? The answer is, we all know, Torah lo b'shamayim hi. The Rav has the authority to paskin. Somehow, if we could figure out a way to translate that into Hilchos Bitachon, doesn't it make sense that we should be able to paskin what my need is? Shamayim goes with the Psak Halacha that's issued here. Now there's a problem, of course. Why do I go to the Rav with my chicken? I go to the Rav for two reasons. Number one, because he's an expert. And number two, because he is objective. Now, when it comes to whether something is a need of mine or just a want, the biggest expert is actually me. I'm the one who knows best what I need and what I just want. No one's going to know that better than I. But The least objective person for that issue is me. So how in the world am I going to turn this into a psak halacha that's reliable? I believe the solution is the same way that we get rid of any lack of objectivity. You bring it over to somebody else. You take a chavrusa. And in the six steps of bitachon, step two must be done with a chavrusa. And what you do is you sit down with your chavrusa and you say to your chavrusa, this is a need that I believe I have. Now you argue against me. And your chavrusa's job is to take your svara apart and to argue you only think you need it, but really you just want it. You've decided it's a need, but who says it's a need? And to fight you and to fight you. And you have to fight back. You have to defend that you believe that it's a need and you're convinced it's a need. And by the end of the fighting, the two of you have to reach a conclusion. Either that it's takin, not a need, or you have to convince your chavrusa that this really is something that you need. And once you've done that, you have a right to issue a psak halacha. This is a need. I'm no longer subjective because I've made sure that I've convinced somebody outside of myself. And now it's clear that this is taka a need. Again, death, you're right.
So 10 minutes before the kid died, you would ask him, does your kid need food? He would have said, yes, I assure you, this kid needs food. He died 10 minutes later.
So I can't tell you what would have happened in a scenario where someone would have applied bitachon. I can apply bitachon with you. Nobody's saying the Gedolim had a lack of bitachon. That's not what we're saying at all. We're saying that to actually take the step of issuing a psak halacha is something that Hilchas Bitachon call for us to do, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's being done in every scenario. That doesn't necessarily mean that someone is sitting down and applying the steps that need to be applied. I'm sorry? Right. So I will grant you for now that when it comes to matters of life and death, I'm not going to satisfy you. You'll have to understand how it works in a normal life, in the context of normal life, and then, as I mentioned to the gentleman in the back, come back to me and ask me about death. I understand your question completely, and I cannot answer it outside of the context of how Hilchos Bitachon works in a normal setting. Allow me to explain first, and I'll deal with your question as a shadow afterwards. A person sits with his chavrusa. Now, the truth is that there are some situations where you do not have to take a chavrusa. They're what I call automatics. There are certain things that are automatically considered needs, and if you have one of those automatics, it's not something that you have to get a chavrusa to sign off on. The four automatics that I believe exist are, number one, if there's a pasuk that says it's a need, that's automatic. If there's a chazal that says it's a need, it's automatic. If a person has a rebbe, and his rebbe says, this is something you need, I don't think you have to question it. That's automatic. Number four, I call derech ha'olam. You know, in Brooklyn, if you live in Brooklyn, it's possible that you don't need a car. There are subways, parking is difficult. You may not be able to put out there that having a car, if I live in Brooklyn, is a need. If you live in Miami Beach, if you live in Minnesota, as I do, so it's very, very difficult to survive without a car, and it's the derech ha'olam to say that a car is something that you need. So that also will vary from situation to situation, but that's an automatic. If it is something that the olam that you're part of, the society that you consider yourself part of, considers a need, you have a right to consider it a need as well. If it's not one of those four automatics, that's when you need to take a chavrusa, and you have to convince the chavrusa, at the conclusion of which you issue a psak halacha.
Would health fall into his category of speak to me after?
Health is a little bit easier to explain, unless it's health, a loss of health that's leading to death. And so it could need to wait.
Then choosing the community you live in, I mean, you've chosen to be in a community where the need is a car, so...
Correct. In many cases, the needs will result from the Avodas HaKodesh that you engage. We are, Hashem is not going to live our lives for us. He's given us life, he's given us a world, he's given us a sense that we have responsibilities to live with in service of Hashem. Our avodas Hashem is our choice. How we believe is the right way. We talk about with our Rabbeim, and we determine what it is that we need to do for our avodas Hashem. Once we've made that determination, that's going to bring some needs in its wake. I'm going to have needs because of the avoda that I've chosen. For those needs, you use bitachon. Let's continue past step two.
Are you suggesting that this is a foolproof process? And if it is a need based on your sock and so on, then boom, the chute opens up and your need is fulfilled? There's such a thing as a shuffle process.
There is such a thing.
Maybe yes, maybe no, only Hashem has the answer.
Correct. All I can tell you is that in the 30 plus years that I have taught the system, there has not been one case, there was one exception, I'll tell you in a minute. Other than one, there has not been a case where it did not work. Now, let me finish and I'll tell you the one case that didn't work and I'll tell you why. But let me continue. I typically take longer to explain this because it does take more than 45 minutes and I've been asked to give it to you in the brief version. Allow me to go through the steps. I'll be happy to answer all the questions that you have. Once we complete step two, we go to step three. Step three, the question is, do I have what Yosef HaTzadik had that the Beis HaLevi talks about in his word in Parshas Miketz? What the Beis HaLevi says is that the reason why Yosef HaTzadik was punished with two additional years in jail was not because he wasn't a Baal Bitachon. It was the opposite, says the Beis HaLevi. It was because he was a Baal Bitachon on such a high madrega that he had no reason to be doing any hishtadlus. He knew Hashem was going to take him out of jail. He knew he had what the Beis HaLevi refers to as hashkatas rucho v'libo. He had complete serenity, complete certainty that he was going to be let out of jail. And under those conditions, it's wrong to do hishtadlus. For a very good reason. I mean, you can just demonstrate it, you can illustrate it very easily. Let's say you have a neighbor who every Friday when he goes to the bakery, he buys challahs for you. He never misses. And you know he's reliable. And he's going again today. So you call to him as he's getting into his car and you say, oh, by the way, are you getting your challahs today? What are you asking for? Do I ever not get your challahs? You know I'm going to get your challahs. It's actually insulting. Once you have that level of bitachon, the lady says that it's a mistake to continue to do challahs, and that was why Yosef HaTzadik was punished. I want to demonstrate to you how every one of us has bitachon, has hashkatas rucho v'libo, at least on a very minimal level. So let's say, for example, I've determined that the next action that I want to take is to get from here to the bima in the middle of the room. Now, what's my next most immediate? If I'm going to take a step, presumably I need that the floor not buckle below me when I take the step. We all understand that Hashem can make anything happen. He can make the floor buckle too. So I have a need that not happen if I'm going to make it over to the bima. Now, do I have any anxiety about whether that floor is going to be there when I put my foot down? I actually have none at all, and neither would you. You take your step without thinking about it. What you've just done is you've just experienced bitachon. Hashkatas rucho v'libo. You were completely unconcerned, even though it was a need. Now, granted, it was a small need as far as needs go. That's not the same thing as needing money to pay your rent, but it's a need. And I want to show how every one of us has bitachon on some level. It's the hashkatas rucho v'libo that would require you to end your efforts at that moment, not do anything else, and wait for Hashem to provide it, because He will. So step three, we ask ourselves, do I have Hashkatas Rucho V'Livo for this particular need that I've just identified, and that I've just paskined is a need? If the answer is yes, then you're done. That's the end of the steps. And watch for it, because it's coming. Because Hashem committed to giving it to you. He's going to. And you have perfect bitachon. In many cases, the answer is no. We're a little nervous. I understand in theory that Hashem is going to provide it. But, you know, I'm not living there. And that's okay. Because every sefer on bitachon says that you're allowed to do hishtadlus. Hishtadlus is designed to bridge the gap between what I know is true, what I know that Hashem is going to provide, and the way that I feel about it. How does hishtadlus work? So we begin with step four.
I thought hishtadlus itself, according to Hashem Ba'echoy, has nothing to do with doing. It has to do with connection. He explains, b'yotchav kidruchi, that's the hachno, but he says yeshav kelanas.
It's probably true, but you'll understand that there are people who have to do something in order to get that feeling of connection.
Many times we do, and we end up with goose eggs.
I'm sorry, we end up with?
We end up with goose eggs, and if we don't do, we end up with being masliach.
There are many times that's true, but if we want to take control of this mitzvah, where we're actually identifying a need and walking it through until its conclusion, we won't be able to do it with those kind of blinders on. We're going to have to do it with our eyes wide open. We're taking control of the process. Step four, I ask myself the following question. What is the absolute maximum amount of effort that I would put in order to get this thing if I needed it and I was not using bitachon? What's the most that I could see? Now everybody has an upper limit. Let's say you need $10,000 by next week. Okay, so, you know, it's difficult to get. You have a number of people you would call, but there's still some limit. You're still going to sleep. You're still going to eat. So you have an upper limit. Step four is, what's my upper limit? Step five also requires a chavrusa. Step five is, what is my actual chiyus hishtadlus? The way we understand hishtadlus is that Hashem is going to provide it, but for some reason I feel a need to get involved. The emphasis, this goes all the way back to Adam Arishon. One of the reasons that Adam Arishon was uncomfortable in Gan Eden is because he didn't feel like he was doing anything. So Hashem said, fine, you want to feel like you're doing things? Go out into the world. You can start planting, you can start plowing, you can do everything. In the end, I'm still going to provide it. But then you'll feel like you're more involved. The truth is that that's what happens when we go to work. We have an obligation as believing Jews to understand that even if I go to work and take home a paycheck, it's not the paycheck that's providing me with my income. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who's doing it through the paycheck. And if I lose my job, there's no reason for me to panic, because it's the same. It's Reb Zusha. If it's not the cook bringing me the breakfast, it'll come through another way. We're mechuyev to understand that and to live that way. But I have a right to do hishtadlus, because naturally we have a little bit of uncertainty and uncomfortability.
But there's also the option that it may not come through a different way. We have to ask for Achmonis.
Then there's an option that the chicken will be considered treif and shamayim. I should need the chicken. If there's a psak halacha and Hashem has committed to giving us our needs, there's really not an option that it won't come.
There absolutely is.
If Hashem has
need to recover that, you're going to need it.
Achmonis prophets means the Yiddishka may or may not provide what I personally need. And I have to daven, and he's a Rachman, and I hope that I appeal to his Rachman, so that the Xer on me is not personally a bad Xer.
So it's not true. What he's saying is basically we get emotionally, we're involved, because we're mixing up what is needed and what is wanted.
So in the brief time that I have to make the presentation, I will not be able to do justice to the question. That question is dealt with extensively in the writings on bitachon that you can find all over. But there's no question that there's a level of bitachon at which I can identify the need and rely safely that I'm going to get it. The Tachba Hashem says, rely that you're going to get it, not rely that Hashem is in charge. I know Hashem is in charge. But Tachba Hashem, Bichu Hashem, means rely that you're going to get this thing. That's what it means. Step five, the question is, what is that amount of hishtadlus? And I believe that you can identify the amount of hishtadlus precisely
to an exact amount of Shabbos. Now, how do I determine what my Shabbos is? I use a chavrusa. And I go back through the same process. And I say, what does it seem that would close the gap between what I'm feeling and what I'm certain about? I'm looking for a job. Listen, you know Hashem is going to provide that job for you. Yes, I know Hashem is going to provide me a job. He always has. I know He will. I know He takes care of me. But I have to send out the resumes. How many resumes do you have to send out to feel comfortable that you've done your hishtavlus and that now Hashem will provide you what it is that you need? If you send out 50 resumes, will that give you the hashkatas ruch of libo? So you have to sit there and you have to calculate how much taka would it take. And there's an actual number. And your chavrusa has to challenge you, and you go back and forth until you come up with the exact amount of hishtavlus, and then you issue another psak halacha. And that becomes the psak for what your fiyat hishtavlus is, no more and no less. If you do more than that, you're making the mistake of Yosef Atzadik in front of the Yisalevi. If you do less, Hashem still may provide for you because He's committed to, but you are not doing your
thing. Could you be married to a chavrusa?
It's not a good idea because you need objectivity. And your wife is not going to be objective. She can't be.
He should trust.
She's very special.
But who says Ishtados itself, but according to everyone, no one, for breath, you don't do Ishtados.
I'm sorry?
For breath. You don't do Ishtadlus.
Because we have Hashkatas Ruch of Alibo already.
So basically,
in step three, if you answer yes, I have Hashkatas Ruch of Alibo, there's no need for Ishtadlus. What is step six? Step six is simply looking at the Ishtadlus that you determine and crystallizing. So, for example, if you decided, you know what, if I send out 10 resumes, I think I'll be able to trust Hashem that somehow through the 10 resumes, or maybe even outside those 10, Hashem will give me what I need. So your key of hishtadlus is to send 10 resumes. Six is, which 10 am I going to send? Which companies am I going to send it to? So it's very specific and very clear. By the end of the six steps, you have an absolute key of hishtadlus. You take care of that. Hashem is going to take care of you. I can tell you that it works every time it's tried. The one time it didn't work, I'll close with this. The one time that it did not work, I had a friend who used it for an incredible need. It was remarkable. That's what will be in the book. But one time he was doing a photo shoot for a promotional piece that he was doing, and he needed that it not rain that day. And he called me up and said, I want to do the six steps of bitachon, and I need to have a dry day. And we went through the six steps, whatever his shadlus was, he did it precisely, and it poured the entire day. And the truth is that up until that moment, I had never had a situation where it didn't work. And he called me, he said, what's going on? And I was ready to throw the whole thing out.
Oh, it's different.
I figured out it's the Gemara in Tainus.
They're
one of the three things that Hashem hasn't given us entire control. So rain, taka, exception that proves the rule.
Don't go into farm.
Rain, taka didn't work.
Don't go into farm.
Okay. My friends, I'll be happy to stay after Mar to talk about it. And anyone interested in the book that's coming, will come out soon. If you want to put your name down, I'll be happy to contact you. You can look at a sample for extra pieces.
That's why.
Thank you so much for listening.
That's
right. So, the truth is.